Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Oh,
Have you had your
I'm a little.
coffee yet?
Yeah, I had some.
Probably around 6 or 7, right?
Yeah, around 7-ish. I think that was when I got up, but I'm a little sleepy. I didn't sleep that great last night.
Was your mind
Just
racing or what?
no, just I don't know, just one of those nights. Took me a long time to feel tired and
It's that
the
damn LED on the screen, I tell you. You need
yeah,
more
maybe.
paper in your life.
Maybe.
Don't
That
read
might
the
be it.
LED before bed. It
Yeah, bring the.
stimulates the eyes.
Yeah. I try to use some of those filters,
Yeah.
I put on that's supposed to help with that, but usually it doesn't bother me too much that I notice. But yeah, there's one, I woke up in the middle of the night and had to go to the bathroom and just getting old,
That's part of it. I was telling
Yeah.
Barb, like, I could almost go the whole day with just like peeing once, and like at night for some reason. I don't know if it's just that I'm horizontal or what, but I have to get up to pee. I don't get it.
Yeah, no,
And then I have trouble getting
I'm in
back
there
to
a lot
bed,
during the
so
day.
it's like, I don't know.
Yeah. But this is
This is Rob is working for the weekend.
yeah, he's well,
Celebration.
they got all that. They got a backlog of data now that everybody has 5G injected into them. He's got to download all that data
Yeah.
from the vaccines.
That's right. It's got to make sure that they're all programmed.
Yeah.
You shouldn't say that. You'll start a new conspiracy. And then
That is
people will
the
start
conspiracy.
believing it.
That is the conspiracy. That is one of the
Yeah, I
conspiracies.
know it is.
Just encouraging it, I
You're
guess.
just giving them more data to chew on.
Yeah. Just validating it. This is where everybody comes for their truth.
Yeah. I don't think Harley can hear anymore.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, she just like doesn't have like response to loud sounds or anything.
How old is she now?
Shoot, I don't know. She's probably about 90 in human years. No, she's probably about 80. She's getting up there, but she still goes for a, she still likes her walks and goes for her mile, a little over a mile walk every day.
Yeah. So when you got her, you weren't sure exactly how old
Yeah, she
they
was
didn't know how
about
exactly she
two or
was.
three.
Yeah.
I think closer to two, just the way she was more of a puppy for sure. She's just huge.
Yeah, that's how around how old Mabel was when we got her.
Yeah.
We
Well,
are the.
Scooter couldn't hear towards his later ear, but he would still be able to respond to like loud sound. Harley is just like, whew. I don't know if it's her ADD or if it's she can't hear, but like you can come in the house and she just doesn't know you're here. She's fast asleep. She sleeps through everything.
I remember when we she knew we were there when we got there, when we came to
Yeah.
visit.
Well, it's just that first time though too. Like
Yeah.
she still barks and everything. She
Yeah.
still acts that way when she's caught asleep, but like if you came and she was sleeping, you could if you were, she didn't feel the vibrations or something, you could sleep right she'll sleep right through it.
Yeah, I remember with Luna, I think her hearing wasn't as good later on.
Yeah.
But every dog's different. Every dog is different, just like every person. We are the 20th century boys.
20th century.
Yeah, I was listening to 21st Century Boys this weekend,
Buck Rogers podcast. Buck Rogers in the 21st century.
it's well, I thought it was
Manga inspired.
I thought it was a Scalp Hunter podcast. That's what I thought it was gonna be.
But it was I think it's everything, but it's the title is rooted in manga, isn't
Yeah, it's taken from a manga, the title is, and they do talk about a lot of manga.
You're aware of the manga shortage, right?
I
There's a
don't think
big
so.
manga shortage right now. They can't like keep manga in stock, and they just don't get it in anymore. So,
In America?
yeah, in America, yeah.
I see.
The
Is it
demand is
partially
the
with the
demand is there. It's not that the demand is diminished.
Yeah.
It's just that there's no supply to feed that demand.
Yeah, with the shipping stuff.
Yeah.
Because it all comes over from Japan.
Does it get translated in Japan though too? Is that like Viz? Does Viz have an American presence? Like Viz is probably the biggest one that I know about.
Yeah, I think they are the biggest. I don't know. I mean, Viz definitely has a American presence, yeah.
I just didn't know if they like got printed over there and then translated over here, or if it's all done over there and then shipped over here. I didn't know
I think
how that worked.
it probably depends on the company,
Yeah.
because where they actually do the work. Like, I think Viz is pretty much an American company, but
They may
like I know some
print
companies.
overseas. I don't know. They might do something like that, and that's what's causing it. I don't know. Well, there's a paper shortage too, so and a print shortage.
Yeah.
There's an ink shortage. There's all kinds of shortages.
Yeah, everything,
Yeah. And then there's a work shortage because people don't want to work for low wages anymore too. They're trying to find
yeah.
other
Yeah,
jobs.
I was looking yesterday at a place for us to maybe go out to eat yesterday, and just like every website I looked at had a help wanted sign on it.
Yeah.
Every restaurant.
And some of them like even when I was in Albuquerque, you notice like they're big restaurants, but they can't like they don't have the staff even like if tables are open to wait those tables.
Right.
So they have to like size accordingly, saying I only have four people here, I can only do this.
Yeah.
Even though the restaurant can accommodate hundreds.
Yeah, you can't look and see the empty tables and assume
Yeah.
that you're going to be able to sit at one of them. Because yeah, they don't have the people. Pretty crazy. But yeah, I was listening. I was catching up with. So that's the Crawford family podcast. Joe and his son, and Jack. I was thinking about how we were recording and how, because we're retro, we're kind of like the 20th century boys, because we cover stuff from the 20th century, although we
And
do
that's it.
10
That's
years,
interesting
so.
because when I was very young, it was like going into the 21st century was Buck Rogers. So you're it's just
Yeah.
yeah. It seemed like real distant.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always funny when you go back to old sci-fi and they talk about the far future and it's like we're already past it.
Yeah.
Or we're living in it right now. Like, isn't it? I think Back to the Future 2 is that way. Like, what they said was when they go into the future and Back to the Future 2, I think it's. Trying to think of what they, it's actually like, I'm looking up now. Yeah, 2015. That's the future that they go to, where they have like
I'm
the.
trying to remember Back to the Future second one, and I don't. Like, I remember the first one was in the 50s, and the third one was the Western. What was the
Yeah.
second one in? The future?
Yeah, that's where
Is
they
that the one
actually
that
go.
had the horse racing or something, and Biff became rich or something because he got the almanac or
Yeah, he
something?
does. There is something with the sports almanac, and I don't know if it was horse racing, but yeah, that's where Marty goes to the future, and he finds out that his children have issues, and that's what the where they had the flying skate, the hovering skateboard,
Yeah, okay, I
and
remember it now.
flying cars and stuff like that. But yeah, so that was the future that they go to. It was 2015, so it
Yeah.
was kind of funny catching. I happened to, like, I think flipping through the channels in a like hotel room or something like that. It was on and watched a little bit of it, and it was kind of funny just to see
Haven't
it
seen
nowadays.
Back to the Future. The last Back to the Future I watched was movies, the documentary on it. The movies that made us, they did Back to the Future.
Okay. Oh yeah, I got in the mood recently to just have like a documentary on in the background, kind of when I
Yeah.
was doing the other stuff, and so I watched all of that High Score
Oh, that's a good
finally.
one. Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, that was good.
I
And
like
then
that one a lot.
I got done with that, so I just started The Toys
That
That
made
Made Us.
us.
That's I watched the
I love
Star
that one,
version.
but it never, it didn't continue like the movies that made us. Like, I don't know if they stopped it or what. My favorite is the Barbie because, first of all, I didn't know much. I tend to like the ones that I don't know. I know the least about,
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
and I latch onto it because it's like, pop culture and stuff like that, but. Like the Barbie, seeing the owners like go to jail and stuff, it's like how they were like faking deliveries and all this stuff they were sort of like laundering money and faking their
Interesting.
what they were making. One of them went to jail for it, so
Wow.
it's pretty crazy. But I like those a lot, the movies and toys that made us. And the movies that made us is really, really good. Even though the theme is relatively similar across every movies that made us, is that the challenges, they had to go through financially, that nobody believed in this. And like the Forrest Gump one is like, well, the director and Tom Hanks had to take pay cuts. They eventually made more on the returns because of how much it made, but nobody believed in it. It's crazy. But it seems like the biggest successes are the ones that the studios didn't believe in. Like the Jurassic Park thing was pretty fun because they had the guys that were doing the computer graphics, and they kept getting told no, even through their boss, like, you can't do this, you can't do this. And some people you don't tell you can't do this. They go behind their boss's back and they say, yes, I can do this, and then
Yeah.
show it to Spielberg, and they're like, holy crap, we can do this. So yeah, those are fun. I like those.
Yeah, a lot of times those are the ones that create the new trends, is the
Yeah.
ones that they don't expect to be a success, and then they're a breakout success, and then everyone scrambles to follow,
Yeah. Well,
Someone gets a new
they take
idea.
the I think they're successful too because they take their biggest risk, and financially they don't have as much money to play with. So they go in with low expectations and then bang, they're this big hit.
Yeah.
Like the Forrest Gump thing was really cool because I learned that kid that played young Forrest, like, just tried out for the part, and they like said, "Oh, this is our, Forrest Gump." But then Tom Hanks like watched what he did. Like he watched his mannerisms, and he watched the way he spoke, and he modeled his voice after that kid. So it's really interesting. Like you learn a lot of like nit facts like that. That's pretty cool.
Same director, actually, Back to the Future and
Yeah,
Forrest Gump,
yeah. And that
Robert Zemeckis.
he was already successful, but they treated him like he wasn't because of the material, the subject matter. Like, not a lot of people believed in the product, except for a couple of producers that they were like, this is going to be a hit, because the original book was totally different, but they loved the book so much that they tried to keep this film alive, and finally it got made. But yeah, it's a fun one. That's a fun, like, if you want to watch one in the background, that's a good one to watch too. It's in the vein of The Toys That Made Us. That's fun stuff. I like that and the video game stuff a lot. Like, I can't remember if High Score, if that's the one that kind of went through each decade, or like kind of like everything. Did that one like start off like with the computer graphics and the Fairchild and work its way all the way to the end?
I mean it goes to a certain point. It started out with a lot of stuff about like the Space Invaders and the arcades and stuff like
Yeah,
that.
yeah.
And then it talks about Atari. And then it had an episode about Nintendo
I
revitalizing.
can't remember if that's the first one though, that there was one that talks about the Fairchild, which was the first cartridge. Like they made cartridges before Atari even did it. And I was like latched on to it because that was my first system. It was the Fairchild. So I was like, wow, they have the Fairchild.
Yeah, I can't remember if they mentioned it, they didn't talk about it too much. I mean, they talked about how then they went through
The computer game one too, like,
computer games a little bit. They talked about like the like Ultima and like the how role playing games and connected to Dungeons and Dragons.
yeah.
And they talked about, then they went into fighting like the controversy with Night Trap and Mortal Kombat
Yeah, how
and
violent they
Street
were.
Fighter, and
Yeah.
the congressional hearings. And then the last episode was where they stopped. It was like, would have been like the late 90s. And they talked about bringing 3D to the games with Star Fox and Doom,
Yeah, there
I
were
think it was.
there were two video game docuseries, I'll say, that I watched back to back, so I kind of get them confused which one's
Okay.
which. And I actually merged them a lot because I
Yeah.
saw them so close
Yeah, it
together.
makes sense.
The other one that's really awesome is King of Kong, which I don't know if you saw that,
Oh yeah, I
but
saw that like a long time ago.
yeah, that was really good. And then the ET, I don't remember what that one's called, like the Search for ET or something like that, and all the buried cartridges in White Sands, New Mexico, or wherever it is.
Oh yeah.
That was a fascinating one. I really like that one.
They did have the guy that created that game in High Score. He did talk
Yeah.
about the development of it, how it was really rushed and
Speaking of Spielberg, that had to do with Spielberg too. He got to meet with them.
He talked about meeting
They
with them and
forced him to make a flop, is what they did. He had to make a game like in a month. He had like 30 days. It's kind of, it's not his fault it was a flop. I remember
No, I didn't
me
really
and my
realize
brother
that.
got that game, and we thought it sucked so bad that I think we put it in the system maybe like twice to try to play it, and then never put it in again.
Yeah, it says it was Alamo Gordo, as Alamo
Yeah,
Gordo, New
Alamogordo, New
Mexico.
Mexico. Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't really, I knew it was real bad. I didn't realize that His name's Howard Scott Warshaw.
He had a success before that one too. He was doing good before they
Yeah.
rushed him.
Yeah, it's he made Yar's Revenge.
Yeah, that game I liked a lot. Did you ever
Considered to
play
be one
Yar's
of the
Revenge?
I gotta look at it. Yeah, I think I played it a little bit when I was
You're like
younger.
this spaceship, and
Looking at a screenshot.
you could shoot at this thing, and like you're trying to shoot at like, it's kind of like a breakout kind of. You're like
Yeah.
blowing away at this thing, and you're trying to destroy the thing in the middle, and you can not only shoot, but you can like chew on it too. So he's got like a wall around him, like breakout, and you can like go up to it and tear it apart and shoot it and. Yeah, it was fun. I liked Yara's Revenge.
Yeah, and the reason that they talked to him about doing ET was because that he had done the game for Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
And yeah, he talks about it in high school. I mean, I realized that I knew ET was a really big game, but I didn't realize that
How many
that it
copies they didn't sell?
Well, that I didn't realize that they, that it wasn't really his fault that they had given him so little time. Like he talks about it in the documentary, how, he talks about how long a game normally would have taken, how long, and like Raiders of the Lost Ark, how long they had for that versus how much time they gave him for ET, and it was like not really possible, but he said okay anyways,
Yeah. He
but
took the challenge, and fortunately, it wasn't to his advantage.
wasn't possible. Yeah,
Yeah. It's
really.
crazy, too, how much drugs those guys used to do.
Yeah, there was something, I don't think it was him, but there was somebody they talked about, wasn't there, where he was like took a bunch of
Yes.
mushrooms or
Well,
something
it's
or
early Atari days, too. They would, like, get
yeah,
plastered drunk, man, and
they were real
drugs and.
crazy.
Yeah, they were crazy.
Which is interesting. I don't know if you've seen any, like, I mean, I don't know. I know you don't follow video games too much, but like Blizzard, the company that made World of Warcraft, they've been they're getting like in lots of trouble
Why?
for that kind of thing, for like,
Psychedelics?
no, for just the workplace environment, like lots of drinking and like sexual harassment and allegedly.
Yeah.
But the yes, the state of California went after them, and they're getting like sued by lots of different organizations, and they're going through, they're owned by Activision.
Yeah, and that was
So
like to me back in the day, Activision was the company that kind of like changed things for the Atari, like with Pitfall and some of their offerings. They were like better. They were just a step above the graphics that like standard Atari homegrown stuff was. Like I love Laser Blast. And I don't know why I did because it's not that great, but at the time I guess it was the first game that me and my brother bought with our own money, so it was kind of fun to buy our own game and play it for
yeah,
hours.
that's cool. Yeah, they've been around for a long time. I think it was started by people that came from Atari,
Yeah,
I
well, I love Atari. Like even when Dynamite was doing the Atari comics, like God, they were so good. I really dug them. There were only two of them. There was the Roll Pit playing one, Sword Quest, which I had never owned, but the comic was amazing. And then there was Centipede. And I was like, I hope they keep making them, and they didn't. Because I wanted like
Yeah,
Missile Command so bad. Like that was one of my favorite games as a kid, and I was like, please do Missile Command.
Yeah, man, I played some Atari because there was a kid in my neighborhood that had one before I ever got any kind of video game system. But my nostalgia is definitely for the Nintendo, because
Nintendo.
that was the first one I got, and it
That's
was
because
like,
yeah. because of our ages, though. Like, I never got in, like, that Nintendo my brother loved, but he's, he's 4 years, 3 years younger than me, so that was his. Even though he grew up with me playing Atari and ColecoVision, he latched onto that Nintendo for sure. And then I kind of skipped all the way to the. I became loyal to Sega, like with Sega, with the Genesis. It was like a new world. It was like the more adult version of Nintendo. I liked it, but and it was sports driven, and that's what drove me. Because of all the video games that I'd rather play, even today, they're all like I want to play baseball, football, and basketball. I don't want to play any of the other stuff.
Yeah, they
I'm
talked about that in High Score too with
yeah.
Sega, how they went to challenge Nintendo, and they talked to the guy that was in charge of American marketing and stuff for Sega and his game plan that he went with. And even in Japan, they were like, "I don't know about this plan," but they were like, "We're gonna trust you to do what you need to do." And it was really successful. And it was like, you were exactly who they were going after. They were like, "Well, we got Nintendo already has the little kids, so we're gonna go after the teenagers, and
Yeah.
then the little kids are gonna see their older siblings playing Sega, and they'll want to do it too." But they sports was specifically a part of their plan too.
So I was pretty loyal to Sega because I was like Sega Genesis, Sega Saturn, and then Sega Dreamcast. Had all of them. And then the next system that I got was the Xbox, but the first generation, and I didn't like stick around very long. The only thing I used it for was the sports to play my friend football, baseball, and basketball. And race, there's some racing games I had and stuff. But I still like have a nostalgia thing for Atari games. Like I have on my iPad an Atari app that I can play Centipede and Missile Command and Asteroids and all those things.
Yeah, your age group is would be the Atari would be the most common to have the nostalgia for, and then mine would
Yeah.
definitely be the Nintendo. And kids now, it's Fortnite.
Yeah, I try. I like. I've played Fortnite, believe it or not, because when I went on that trip with my brother, his son got me to play Fortnite a couple times, and it was okay. Like I thought it was interesting. It's like you drop out of a plane and you're kind of shooting stuff and picking up other weapons, and you're playing against other people. It was kind of interesting. And then I read the comic, of course, because there was the Batman Fortnite, so.
Yeah, even though I'm pretty into gaming, I've never played Fortnite. I don't even do. I know it's like sort of a first person shooter or
Shooter.
whatever, but do you shoot other players or do they?
Yeah, you
Okay.
either can go in there and team up with other people, or you can shoot them and take their stuff. You don't know who to trust though when you're, unless you have some kind of communication with other players. You just get thrown into the game, and I just kill everybody that I see.
Yeah, people probably make squads or something, or
Yeah. Sure.
talk over the internet.
And I know you can get like skins and stuff 'cause I was giving my nephew my Batman skins from the comic book.
Yeah, that's why a lot of the games that are free to play make money is with the stuff like that.
So yeah,
Skins.
I don't play a lot of games now, but I'm not opposed to reading comic books about games because I can learn a lot from them. And I don't. Usually, I don't find that I have to play the game to like the comic book because they're usually like post-apocalyptic or, like fantasy or something.
Yeah, they Hopefully they do a good job of making it, so you can read it even if you're not into the game or something. I mean, Injustice really did a lot of comics
Yeah, I
when
don't
that
even
came
know
out
what the
for.
game is there, but the plot around it was fascinating in the comic book.
I mean, it's a fighting game like Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, but it all revolves around factions of the superheroes breaking up because of the Joker tricking Superman into killing his own wife. So it's violent as hell.
Yeah, well, it's actually made by the same company that makes Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
And they story the story's the story's really big in the game too. There's a lot of even though it's a fighting game, there's like when you play single player, it's there's a lot of story to go through. I played a little bit of the first one, and there's a lot of DC story. I think Jimmy Palmiotti was at least involved in writing the story for one of them. The
Yeah, I know the
in-game
comic
story.
was mostly got Tom Taylor.
I don't.
And that's how he kind of formed his like loyalty, 'cause like Tom Taylor's got a huge following, like just with people in general, because he's done like Deceased. He likes playing in worlds even at Marvel that you could tell he has a passion for like continuity, because like continuity is a big deal to him. But he likes to play with the Elseworlds of that continuity. So it feels like when you're reading his stuff, it feels like, wow, this guy understands a lot and is taking it into this world. But it's because he knows the characters. Yeah, so, but now he's doing like Nightwing, and that book's like starting to increase in sales and stuff, so.
And Dick's back, right?
Yep. It's no wrong. Rick Grayson. Which I thought was a good plot. I like when they change shit up like that. Like, it just keeps it from getting stagnant. I like that he was driving a taxi and was sort of like taxi driver. He didn't know who he was, and
Hanging out with underage prostitutes.
yeah, that was great stuff. I like when they flip shit on its ass. Like every time they do that in anything, I like it. Some people hate it because that's not mine, but that just means you're like to be on the merry-go-round instead of the roller coaster.
And they gotta, I mean, even if they know people are gonna like complain, they have to change things up. So even if it's just so that they can, promote the fact that they're changing things back,
Yeah.
just 'cause they gotta keep it fresh somehow. Keep things, gotta do things to when you have characters that have been around in so long.
Yeah, you gotta inject something into it, and hopefully, when a company does that, they can play it into something that makes some money, like a video game or something. Like I know that one Spider-Man game, like it came up with like a new costume, like with the spiders white, and I like that new costume design. Like I find that costume design like more appealing than some of the ones that they've come up with recently for Spider-Man. It's a real eye catcher, I think.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite's always the classic one, but it's not bad compared to, like you said, some of the other ones that they've done.
Yeah. And
But that game was very
some are
successful.
based on fads too, like 80s or 90s fads. Like the Ben Reilly Spider-Man costume. Like it doesn't hold up today, but it was pretty badass back when it came out. Like I liked it. I was like, this is cool. He's got this like blue thing over his shoulders, and I liked it. But I read the Ben Reilly stuff way late. So I don't know like what it was like experiencing it, like how long the Clone Saga was, just reading it monthly, so I can't like
Yeah.
say I experienced it monthly and it like dragged on forever. I just read an entire omnibus with, you know, about it. And I thought it was
Right.
great, and just being able to like read the entire thing, it didn't seem bad. But I can see may some stuff works really well when you read it like in a batch instead of like monthly, because then you're gonna say, oh, it's still here, it's still here, you know.
Yeah, I think that definitely can affect things. Make it feel, I think that's what it sounds like from people. I didn't read it at the time either, but that's what it sounds like from people that were reading it at the time. It just seemed to drag on too long
Yeah.
for most people.
I have a lot of omnibi, and that was one that I read, like, 'cause I never had read it before. And I enjoyed it a lot. Like and it helped me understand a lot of the current stuff in comics, 'cause Ben Reilly still exists and the Jackal and, you know, all these characters are still there. And it kind of felt it's so epic that it Those characters mean a lot more now when I read them, you know?
Yeah, that's, I like having the history. You can, it's like you can, it's, if it, as long as it's written well, you should be able to understand and follow the story and know some
Yeah.
of the significance. But if you really have that history and have spent the time reading about the characters, then you can really, it has a resonance, you know, that you can't quite get otherwise a lot of times.
Yeah, speaking of, for this week, I read a couple of anthologies, and the one thing with anthologies that's really hard, like I read heavy metal, and it took a while. It took like 4 issues for me to like get sucked into the anthology mode, because all of the stories are at different points in time. Like I might be in a part 2 for one story and a part 14 for another.
Yeah.
And a part one for one, which is great because you're starting at the beginning. But yeah, it's kind of rough. Like I didn't own a lot of Dark Horse Comics Presents growing up. I think I have a lot of the second volume, but not the first. And I was just listening to Rob and Rob Servations talk about a lot of Frank Miller, and I'm like, God, I haven't read Sin City, and instead of getting like, yeah, I can go read it in its entirety, I was like, I really want the single issues, and I thought they were fairly affordable. So I got the Dark Horse Comics Presents issues, and it was the first, this was number 51, which is like the first Sin City, and it also had like parts to other stories. One was the last part to Harlequin, and then it had a story called Heartbreakers, which was part two. So you can obviously get, like, when I was reading it, like, I had no idea what was happening in the finale. Like, I didn't get it at all. The art was pretty good, but I didn't understand it because I didn't have the previous parts.
Yeah.
Harlequin was written by Stephen Castoros, and art was Stefano Giordano, and I like the art, and I sort of could read the story. Like, there wasn't, because it was weird and I didn't understand it, I just didn't know where I was and what why these characters were doing what they were doing, and so that story was kind of lost to me. The second story, Heartbreakers, was on part two, and this one I kind of could get into because it's like sci-fi, and it's about a bunch of clones, and they're trying to run away, and they're being hunted down by an organization that wants to kill them. So, but it's a clone of the same person, like they all look the same. So they're all women and they all look the same. So yeah, that was a pretty good one. That like I was able to it was only part two, so I was sort of able to jump into the story. And that was by Anaya Bennett with story and art by Paul Gunnan. So these are people that I am not even familiar with. And then this what I really read it for was Sin City, which Frank Miller did everything, the story art and lettering. And that was, God dang. I mean, there's different styles, like, of, I've read a lot of Frank Miller, Frank Miller, Daredevil, The Dark Knight Returns. I recently read Holy Terror because it was that Dark Knight Returns. It's really the third part, but they decided not to publish it, DC, because of the controversy of it. But yeah, I haven't read like some of his Dark Horse stuff because he's done a couple of Dark Horse things. So yeah, I'm looking to read that, and I love the movies, like both Sin Cities, like I thought were phenomenal movies. I mean, they were just artistically beautiful, and the stories were very cool. This first story opens up with Marv, and he's sort of like holding the hand of a woman that's in bed naked and she's dead. And he's kind of like being hunted down by the police. And that's how the story opens. And you get your, in these anthologies, there's like, 10 pages of story, and then it says to be continued. And you kind of just seeing running from police, and then a police car corners him, and then he crashes through the window and kills the two cops, and then takes off and says, I'll avenge you, Goldie. And that's how that ended. And then it had a cool letters page, which, man, I love reading the letters pages from old stuff. This one I love because it was controversial, of course. And the one thing you learn a lot from these letters pages is you learn a lot about the time period. And there were a lot of homophobes writing into this story that was called the Aerialist, which was one of Dark Horse's first attempts within Dark Horse Presents to have adult material. Like, I guess in this story it said adult content or something like that. And it just caused all kinds of letters to come out of it. It was crazy. All kinds of different viewpoints, like born again Christians actually defending the homosexuals because of the guy that was attacking them in the letters. It was just crazy. And it was almost more informative than everything else that was in the anthology. But it is black and white, and it was really interesting. And I do have the full Sin City first arc, which was in Dark Horse Presents. But it also makes me want to read things like Concrete and just, Paul Chadwick, stuff that I haven't explored because I had absolutely no interest in it at the time. At the time that was coming out, if it wasn't sci-fi or other genres, like I wouldn't typically go out of my way for like crime comics or anything. And now I'm a different person, so I can experience it all. But yeah, it was a fun little romp. I have to say that this Frank Miller art has got to be one of my favorite of time periods of him doing art for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that I haven't read any Sin City. I haven't seen the movies because I like crime comics nowadays. Something I really should get around to at some point.
Yeah.
But you're right, it is tough to jump into an anthology at like a random issue.
Much easier with a Marvel or DC anthology. And the reason I say that is because most of the time I'm familiar with the characters. So it's like I can at least jump into like part 15 and know that this Green Lantern is doing X, or this, Daredevil's kind of in this situation, and I know who Daredevil is. But when you're flying in blind with like a heavy metal or Dark Horse Presents, it could be difficult.
True.
So that was DHP 51, and I just bought it.
Nice. Very smooth transition and talking about comics there today
Ah.
too. Or am I,
Look at that.
So, all right. Well, I read everything I read today was on Hoopla, just to answer that question in advance for you. I read in What If Volume 1, I read What If. I gotta scroll back to it because I was going ahead just to see what the other. It's funny looking. I don't know who said it, but I know at some point I heard somebody say, that it's funny to look back at the original What If series because it's almost like in the last couple of decades they've gone and taken the ideas from them and put them into the regular Marvel
Continuity,
continuity.
yep, they sure have. Like, what if Spider-Man joins the Fantastic Four? Well, Jonathan Hickman's run, he was.
Yeah,
So it's
exactly.
like, yeah, what if Jane Foster is Thor? Well, she was.
Yep.
So you can get a lot of it. Like, what if Conan was in today's times? Well, there's Savage Avengers. So yeah,
Yep.
it's.
Yeah, they just, I guess it's a good backlog of ideas. It's like you're stuck for an idea, go see if there's a what if issue that hasn't been brought into regular continuity.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I spotted this issue, number 9. What if the Avengers had fought evil during the 1950s? And
Ah, that spawned off a comic too.
it's
Howard Chaykin's Avengers 1950 something.
oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize this one had some kind of connection. It's so it's written by Don Glut. But it seems like a very Roy Thomas issue. And in fact, he's credited not only with editing the book, but the concept, which shouldn't surprise anybody that knows anything about Roy Thomas and his interests. The art's by Ellen Kupperberg and Bill Black. And the framing story is the Avengers at the time. Iron Man calls four of them. To Avengers Mansion, specifically Thor, Beast, Captain America, and Vision. And Iron Man, this must have been around the time of like Avengers 141 or so, because they make a reference to that. Because the device that Iron Man has, he's states it's his own version of the dimensional transporter that brought the Squadron Supreme into their world. But it picks up, images of another world, and that's kind of how we get this story. And it concerns an FBI agent named James Wu. He first encounters 3D Man, which is one of the characters. What I thought was kind of interesting and what, seems very Roy Thomas-esque about this issue is it has a bunch of sort of obscure characters. Mostly, 3D Man was from Marvel Premiere, and not that, I don't, I think was kind of contemporary to this issue, but the rest of the characters are pulled more out of the period of Marvel's history. In the 50s, you have Marvel Boy, she doesn't join up with the group, but you there's a sequence of a few pages where they run into Jan of the Jungle, Jann, who apparently, so there's all kinds of Roy Thomas footnotes all over this thing and letting us, know the comic history, and apparently she had a comic of her own during the 1950s. And when they're in the jungle, they also run into Gorilla Man, who does go off with Marvel Boy in his ship. We also there's also an appearance by Namora, Namor's cousin, and they go underwater to find a robot that's sunk underneath there. The goddess Venus shows up around this time, and but Namora doesn't stick around because she's looking for her cousin Namor, and Namor wasn't found until Fantastic Four, number four.
You know what this inspired, though, for Marvel Comics, right?
What's that?
Agents of Atlas.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember that.
But Venus also had her own Golden Age presence.
Yeah, they get to a point in the story where a lot of these characters have shown up, and then it breaks back to the regular Marvel universe. The Watcher breaks into. I don't know if this is supposed to be Watu, because he's definitely very like different looking. This guy's like beefy Watcher. He's like real muscular and got a big like King Kong Bundy head.
He ate too many Whoppers or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's a different.
It has to be Uatu,
He's got a different
though.
look.
It
I don't
just
know if
means
it's
that
just
he's drawn differently.
Kupperberg had a different take on him or something, or maybe he was looking this way at this time. But yeah, they have like a big 2-page spread where they break it all down with tons of footnotes. Where Uatu talks about how Captain America was in the middle of the 1950s had gone mad, and why he's not around, but he breaks down like Gorilla Man, story that had occurred in Men's Adventures number 25, talks about Marvel Boy and references Marvel Boy number one from 1951. The robot that they dig out of the or pull out of the water, they have to like create a new regulator for it so that it isn't evil. And the reason it was down in the water and short-circuited goes back to a comic called Menace, number 11. But yeah, Venus, as you said, she had her own magazine during the 1950s. And then 3D Man comes from Marvel Premiere 35, which I interesting they put him in here, because he's more recent character. But it seemed like they were kind of
Using all the Golden Age, and then they threw him in.
and I guess because it comes back later on that part of the reason the Iron Man brought those specific Avengers there is that there's a analog to each one of them, and they talk about and comment on that. So 3D Man is actually supposed to be the sort of like Captain America with their fighting styles and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think he inspired Triathlete, which was Avengers.
That was like the Busiek Perez Avengers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's all threes. It's like three times stronger, three of everything. Marvel Boy is supposed to connect to Iron Man because of the laser beam from his gauntlets, kind of similar to his repulsor rays. Beast, obviously, Gorilla Man. and Vision, the human robot, obviously, and Venus and Thor. But yeah, it's the story kind of involves President Eisenhower protecting him. They pull in villains from the 50s as well. You've got Skull Face, who's a skeleton. A skeleton of an alleged demon. You've got Electro, but not the Spider-Man villain. He's a Russian. A guy named Cold Warrior, and the Great Video, a guy with like X-ray vision. And apparently, some of the comics they come from are Mystic number 6, Captain America 78, Marvel Premiere 37, and Marvel Boy number 1. So, villains that sort of connect back to the heroes that we've got. But yeah, I enjoyed it. It was overall like just kind of a fun. I'd come across that Marvel Premiere issue in the past of 3D Man, and I'd seen Marvel Boy around, but Venus, Human Robot, Gorilla Man, like I wasn't really familiar with them, at least in the context of Marvel. So
Yeah.
that was kind of neat.
If you enjoyed it, you should go to the Marvel Unlimited and pull up that Agents of Atlas.
Yeah, that
It's a lot of Jeff Parker in there.
yeah, I remember when that was coming out, and I always thought it would be something I'd like. But what is neat, they in these What If Classic collections, they have the letter pages, and they do talk about this a little bit. They said they actually hoped What If number 9 to be the Conan in the 20th century story. But there's some issues with getting that done. Apparently John Buscema went off to France to be a guest of honor at the comic thing, and so they're not quite done yet. But Roy came up with this idea. I guess he well he so I guess he was the creator of 3D Man, so that's also why he's in here. And maybe 3D Man in that Marvel premiere was a 1950s character. And then he brought Don Glut up, and I guess Don Glut's really into the 50s comics as well, so he brought in some ideas to bring some of the other characters in, and stuff. So it's nice when they include the letters pages, because sometimes it's not just the letters, but they sometimes have that little bit of back matter where they give you some information about the comic that just there might be stuff about the creation of the comic that isn't recorded anywhere else, you know.
Yeah, just like I learned
So.
about the aerialist, and now I want to read it. So it's like letters
Yeah.
pages give you a lot of context for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool when they include that stuff.
Well, my next one brings the Vigil brothers. I think they're brothers together. Joe Vigil and Tim Vigil. A lot of people in the 90s will know Tim Vigil from publications like Faust and things from God, what was that studio called? He used to do Raw Media Illustrated and a couple of other things. But he's known for his extreme violence as well as sexual content in his magazines. They're adult themed. And this one comes out from Avatar, and what year is this? 1998. In 1998, I wasn't reading a lot of Avatar. I started reading Avatar quite regularly around the Crossed time period, and that's when the writers like Garth Ennis was there, and Warren Ellis and Alan Moore were heavy into the Avatar books. This one, I think they were more violent and sexual at the time. This one I liked a lot. I really like this one, and I only own issue 1 and 3, and I'm missing 0 and 2, and I want to get the whole thing. I would have read number 2 if I had it, because I liked it so much. The art is amazing, but Tim V. Hill is hyper detailed. He was inked by somebody else, and you can kind of tell when somebody else inks him, because when Tim inks himself, he's even more detailed in his artwork. But he's inked by somebody called Tim Taylor. The script is by Darryl C.L. Donald, and there's lots of covers that go along with it. But it opens up kind of in a narrative where Kuda is riding a horse going into a city, and you kind of learn that this guy's really violent, like he's a barbarian, and he wants to destroy anything that's magic. So somehow along the line, magic had done him wrong, and he just hates sorcery. And what's the first thing he runs into is a woman. She's wearing a hood, but no clothes, and her name is Fire Moon Watcher, also known as the Crimson Reader, the Seer of the Red Seas. And she tries to mess with him, like, I know you're going to the city, I've seen the vision, I know what you're gonna do. And he just like rides past her. He's like, I don't want nothing to do with you, witch. And he goes into the city, into a bar, and he's told tales of another sorcerer, and this sorcerer is kind of cool looking. He wears like one of those, I don't know what they are, but like in the Victorian age, when they'd go to like costume balls, they'd have like a little popsicle stick attached to a mask. I don't know. And then they'd lift their mask up and put it down. Well, this sorcerer has one of those masks, and he has this very large ape wearing a mask. I mean, this gorilla is huge. And he's riding a horse, and he's running in with this gorilla, and he's carrying a woman in chains. And this sorcerer's name is Kaleth, and this older man comes up, and he's like, "Kaleth, I will not permit you to harm my daughter. This I swear." And Kaleth is like, "What are you talking about? You promised that if I made your crops, you had a good crop year and you did good with the farm and all this, that I would get your firstborn daughter." And he goes, "Well, I made a mistake. You're not taking my daughter away from me. You can have all my crops." And he's like, "I didn't want your crops. I want your virgin daughter." And this guy pulls out a spear, and the daughter's like, "No, please, father, leave me now. Just let it be." And he pulls out the spear. "No, you're not taking my daughter." And then he sicks the gorilla on him, and this huge ape just rips off his arm, just like with the first attack, flips him over his head, and sort of pulls him apart. He kills the father. And so he accomplished nothing other than this. You learn that this woman's telling this story to Kuda. And this woman has a patch over her eye, and she's gorgeous, and she's a thief. And it looks like they're going to team up, Kuda and this thief. And there are a couple of people that this thief stole artifacts from, so there's like 5 guys that are coming after her in the alleyway. And Kuda just watches as he still hasn't like bought on to like teaming up with this woman yet. And she fights off these 5 guys, and then while she has her back turned, one of the guys grabs an axe and is going to stab her in the back, and then Kuda kills that guy. He drives a sword right through his chest, and they end up teaming up. But I like it because this is like a thief. It's like a Conan book, except this guy really hates magic, and they're after this sorcerer, which is really cool. And they have a lot of ads for comics that I want to at least look up. Like, I know they did Faust at like North Star and Rebel Studios, but there was this book that Avatar put out called Faust 77 The Wrath, and I didn't even know it existed. So I put that on my want list at my comic shop, but they didn't have any in stock. And then there was a couple other books I put on. There's a Soulless one, which is adult manga through Avatar, which looked interesting. And I don't remember what else, but there was a couple of series here I'd never even heard of. So this was a time that I was probably ignoring the entirety of the Avatar library. But a lot of these properties have since been published by a company called Boundless, who is also Adult Books. Like, I know it has The Lookers in there and Pandora, and Web Witch has been published by American Mythology and also Widow. So some of these characters, The Ravening has been published by Boundless. So some of these properties still exist today. But I have none of the Avatar stuff, but it looks really good. But I really, really like this because I love like Conan type books. And I actually like Cuda better than the most recent Barbaric that I came across. Barbaric's a comic that's just coming out from Vault Comics, and it's about a barbarian that has an axe that talks to him, much like in the vein of if you go watch the Venom movies, if you've seen Venom or the new Venom, the Venom symbiote is able to talk to Eddie, and nobody can hear Venom really talk except for Eddie while he's attached to him. Well, that's like Barbaric with the axe. Like, they think he's crazy because he's talking to his axe, but his axe is really talking to him. And he teams up with the witch in that one, which is very similar, except that witch can hear the axe. So she's the only other person that he's ever run across to that can hear that axe. So I've been like really into the barbarians lately. Makes me want to get caught up on Conan for sure. But yeah, this was fun stuff. I hope I can track down the next one, or I might just go ahead and read number three and then backtrack if I can get the other issues.
Is Avatar still put stuff out?
The last thing they put out was Warrior Nun, and they still have a section in previews, but it's all backlog stuff. Like, they don't have any like ongoing books right now. So I think both Boundless and Avatar are sort of in a place where they're trying to clear their warehouses and find out if they're going to exist anymore.
Kind of tough time for
Yeah, I picked it
smaller.
up because I got into Rob Liefeld a lot, and I didn't realize that Rob, for 1 year, took some of his properties over to Avatar. So I read those, and I liked them a lot, and that's how I started. That's how I like go down these rabbit holes. It's basically through ads in the comic book. Like, I'll read like Cuda. And then by reading Cuda, I've added three more titles to my comic shop. So that's what happens. Or I'll go down to Wikipedia or something. I'll say, what else did Tim VanHeele do that I don't have? You know? And I was like, I really want more of his material. And that's how I go down rabbit holes. So you can see how the web just grows, because one comic can spawn off like four things, and then I get that comic in, and then it spawns off another four things, and it never ends.
Yeah, the ads are still doing their job years later.
Yeah.
Making money for my comic shop anyway.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So I, speaking of crime stuff earlier, I was flipping through and I noticed that, so Hard Case Crime, they started out as a book publisher, putting out mostly out of print crime novels, with the occasional new one. And they've gotten into comics in recent years through working with Titan Comics. Mostly newer stuff, but they last year, I think, started reprinting the Miss Tree comics by Max Allan Collins. Apparently they're planning 6 volumes all together. They're going to try to put out all the Mystery comics, because Mystery was published over a bunch of different. They started at Eclipse, Aardvark, Vanaheim, Renegade Press, and then eventually DC Comics. It's about a female detective. Obvious play on words there. Mystery, Ms. Tree. Michael Tree is her actual name. Her father wanted a boy and went ahead and named her Michael anyways. And as she comments in this comic, some might say that her having a man's name is appropriate anyways. She's a pretty tough lady. It's interesting. Max Allan Collins, he's got a one-page introduction where he briefly talks about the history of the comic, and then talks about how they actually decided not to start with the very first Ms. Tree comics with the volume one. But with what they thought, what he feels was kind of the best work that they did. That was some of the DC stuff. And this first volume is 5 stories that kind of link together into one big graphic novel. So that's what they decided to start off with volume one. Volume two is out as well, and it looks like volume three is coming out next month, with more Ms. Tree comics. But this volume has 5 stories that kind of connect together,
Which one is it reprinting?
so it's pre-printing stories from Ms. Tree Quarterly.
Okay, that's what I thought. And then you said 4 or 5, but Mystery Quarterly had 10 issues.
10 issues. So this reprints
And
stories
this
from.
was thick though too. Like these were big stories. This was not
Yeah.
like a this was not like a 22-page comic. They were 80-page type
Yeah, and they had
comics.
backups. Like the story I read was from Mystery Quarterly number one, and it also had a couple backup stories. The backup stories are not reprinted.
Okay.
Where I mean, some of them even had like this had a this issue originally had a Batman story in it, so they don't have the by Denny O'Neil and Mike Grell. They don't have the rights to that, but he does have the rights to his mystery stuff. So this has the. I'm assuming from the first 5 issues of Ms. Tree Quarterly, and then Volume 2 has the stories from issues 6 through 10, which were apparently standalone, didn't link together like these first 5 do. But they just wanted to start out with what felt was their best work. I read the first story. It's called Gift of Death. The artist is Terry Beatty. And I liked it a lot. I think it still still reads really well today. It connects Ms. Tree. She has like a history with this organization, this Muerta crime family, and they killed her husband, and she's at this point killed a number of them. But the Muerta family is now Muerta Enterprises International, and they're going legit, or at least claiming to. And Dominique Muerta, who is now the head of the family, is wants to meet with her. But this all occurs after the beginning scene of the comic, where someone breaks into her house and tries to kill her. She ends up of obviously not getting killed, but she ends up taking him out. And it's funny, she shoots him a couple times in the chest. He gets knocked down, but then when she's leaning over, he pops up again and grabs her by the throat. And she's like, he's like, "Smart girl like you never heard of body armor." And you know, that's where he talks about it. Turns out that he was the guy that where it was the Muerta family that ordered the kill. He was the actual assassin that killed her husband. So there's a panel of her while he's choking her, there's a panel of her reaching her hands towards his crotch, and then the next panel is a close up on their faces, and he's screaming, and she's got her comeback to say, "Smart boy like you, wearing body armor but not wearing a cup." But she kills him, so that's the context that she goes to see Dominique Muerta. And she Dominique says, "How'd you like my peace offering?" Basically, she sent the person that killed Ms. Tree's husband to give Ms. Tree an opportunity to kill the guy, that guy. Dominique wants to let bygones be bygones. You know, the Muerta family is going straight. They had established a lot of businesses to launder their money through, etc. And those businesses actually have become very successful. And it's not necessarily for them to be in drugs and that kind of stuff anymore. It turns out that Ms. Tree's stepson, Michael Tree Jr. So funny little quirk of the series is that her husband's name was Mike, and her stepson's name is Mike, and her name is Michael. So it's they're all Michael. Her stepson is dating Dominique Muerta's daughter. Dominique tries to hire Ms. Tree as her new head of security. She's going to pay her $400,000 a year. She can bring all her own Tree investigation staff on board. They'll be all getting a raise. And because you never know, someday they might be related through their kids. Well, Ms. Tree's answer is to sack her across the face. She punches her so hard that Dominique flies into the wall and knocks the painting askew behind her and walks out muttering about the presumptuous bitch. But we see later on that that evening, Dominique's nephew Donnie, who's also like in a part of this move to make the company legit, comes in, and they have a conversation and about their plans, and he leaves, and then someone else comes into the room, and we're not shown who that is. She's just kind of like, "What do you want? Wait, hang on, I don't appreciate being interrupted when I'm working late. Make an appointment." And we see whoever it is raises a gun and shoots her several times in the chest and kills her. So the next day, a police officer shows up at Ms. Tree's house and talks to her about, tells her that Dominique was killed. He doesn't seem to really think that she did it, but he's got to acknowledge the fact that, according to the fact, she's the prime suspect. After he leaves, her stepson's not too pleased to hear this, and actually seems like, actually asks her if she did it, and seems like they're, having kind of a rough patch. She's not his real mom, et cetera, that kind of thing. So she actually goes and shows up at the funeral for Dominique, and there's a couple guys out front that don't want to let her in, but she smacks him across the face with her purse, which has got a gun inside of it, and knocks them both out, ties their ties together, takes their guns and hands them to Donnie, who comes out and goes inside, and she ends up talking to Dominique's daughter there, and they go outside together and get in the car, and they talk to each other, and it's Dominique's daughter, that Lisa, that wants to talk to her, and she believes that Ms. Tree wouldn't have killed her mother, and she actually wants to hire her to find out who did. Ms. Tree doesn't, she's not interested in money, but the only thing she wants is that if she's going to continue to be involved with her stepson, that they're not going to make any kind of rash decisions and go off and get married before they even go to the prom, that they're going to take their time and be smart. So they shake hands on the deal, and she tells Lisa, "Don't tell anybody that I'm going to be doing this," because she needs to do the job from the inside. Ms. Tree does actually go and offer her services to Donnie Moretta, who's now in charge as head of security. But before she does that, two of the people that work with her, one that used to be her husband's partner in the police, she tells them, I'm going to go offer myself as the head of security, but it's going to be temporary, and only the two of you will know that. But keep things going at our investigations while I'm gone." So she convinces Donnie to hire her because their security isn't that great, or it's not as good as it could be if she were in charge. And he's suspicious of her, but he's convinced by the fact that she states that she wants to clear her name as the prime suspect. So the current chief of security is this guy named Barney Phillips. He makes me think of Barney Fife. He thinks that she's just coming there to take her office, but she tells him, "No, I'm," and apparently she knows him. He used to be a cop himself, even saved her husband's life a few times. He quit the serve, he quit the police to take the job at Muerta, and I guess Mike Tree wasn't too happy about him doing that, and seeing as the Muerta were involved in organized crime and stuff. But he did it, to support his family and all that. So she actually keeps him on anyway, as assistant director of security, and everyone's still going to report to him and stuff like that. They do their some typical investigation things, look into disgruntled employees and stuff like that. And eventually she has a meeting with all the security staff and stuff like that. And says that everybody in the room is going to be taking a polygraph test regarding Dominique's murder. And some guy says, stands up, "Are these tests voluntary? We got certain rights, you know." She says, "Yeah, of course these tests are voluntary. I'm particularly interested in finding out who doesn't want to take a lie detector test." So not long after, Barney comes to her and says, "Well, your tactic works. Worked. You might not even have to go through with all these lie detector tests. I've been approached by an employee who wants to meet with you one-on-one." They want to meet at midnight in the underground parking garage, just you and them. So, she knows something's up, but she goes because she's got the guts. And Barney himself shows up, and she says, "I'm supposed to meet with the employee alone." And he's got a gun out, and she's like, "Is that necessary?" And he said, "Yeah, it is, because I'm actually the employee that wanted to meet with you." And she says, "I know." And she says, "Well, at least I suspected." She hopes she was wrong. She points out that their security wasn't too good. He's over 50, an ex-cop. He's hardly what Dominique would have thought of as, cutting-edge security chief for their company that's going legit. And he knew that he knew he was going to get fired regardless of who was brought in to replace him. And so he started sucking up to Donnie. And it seemed like while Dominique was pretty legit, or pretty honest about truly wanting to go to legit with the company, especially with her daughter and everything. Donnie, not so much. And, he's not the type to go out and tell somebody to do something, but he would make it clear in so many words what he would want to have happen, so he could have deniability. He made it pretty clear to Barney that he wouldn't complain if his aunt was killed. So Barney was the one that killed Dominique. But he wants Ms. Tree to help him out, and he'll help her take Donnie down from within. As long as, she helps him cover his tracks so he doesn't get pinned for the murder of Dominique. And she flat out tells him no. And She's just gonna have to, she says, you're gonna have to shoot me. And she bets on the fact that he could shoot somebody like Dominique. He could come up with justifications to do that, for her past actions and stuff like that, but that he didn't have it within him to shoot someone like her point blank in the face. And it's pretty clear that he's not going to be able to do it. He lowers his gun, but just at that point, he gets shot by somebody. It's some goon from Muerta. Again, same sort of situation. He didn't have an explicit order to kill Barney, but he knew that was what Donnie wanted. So she goes to confront Donnie, and typical situation. He never, explicitly told anybody to do any of these things. He even tries to make it sound like, it's too bad that she shot the guy who shot Barney, and where she knows that he's glad that that's how things turned out, so yet another person can't be traced back to him. So she tells him that he's pretty much gone to the head of her personal shit list, and he says, most of my employees speak to me more respectfully than that. And she says, oh yeah, well, here's my resignation. She cracks him across the jaw like she did his aunt at the beginning of the issue. And that's the end of the issue. But apparently not the end of the story, because the next, four issues, whereas I think they're, fairly self-contained, they all tie together. So it was really, really good.
Are you gonna finish the trade or?
I think so, yeah. I would like to keep reading. I was I'm definitely in the mood for like crime comics. I thought it was really well done. The art's reminds me like a little bit of like Rizzo that did like 100 Bullets. Not a little bit. But in the sense that it's like has like an influence of cartooning to it, but not so much that it's that it's inappropriate for a crime comic. He worked with Collins on Wild Dog also. If anyone's read that, it's the same team that DC published as well.
Yeah, if you get a chance, read those hard case crime new stuff that they put out. It's really good. The Girl Who Handcuffed Houdini, that's amazing. By Cynthia Von Buhler. It's really good.
Yeah, I read some or all of the very first one that they did, I think.
You read Peep
And
Show?
I think that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah, that one's really good.
And I actually, way before they ever did comics or whatever, I was pretty heavy into the hard case crime for a little while. I was actually getting like physical copies, and read a lot of them. I read quite a few of them.
Cool deal.
Yeah.
I still have to finish mine and it my novel. Maybe next
That's a
year.
maybe a retirement project for you.
I'm halfway through. I just need some time.
You just have been halfway through for a few
Yeah,
years now.
forever. It's not that it's bad. It's just I'd rather
That's,
redirect my time to comics.
yeah.
What little time I have.
Yeah.
Because I'm usually too tired on the weekdays to do anything. I usually get out of work and like I Don't want to read. Even comics, like, I have a hard time. I might read one a night if I'm lucky. And then I just decompress with whatever show me and Barb are watching, which is why The Last Man now are evil. And then top that off with some Seinfeld and go to bed. That's my week.
Yeah, I can tell. I mean, having been friends with you on social media with you for quite a few years now, like I can tell you're pretty wiped out from work during the week because your activity is mostly on the weekends.
Yeah, it's pretty much in the early morning or late night if I do anything during the week. And it's usually just retweeting some cool things I've seen. And then the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, I tweet a lot, but other than that, I'm pretty quiet. And I do the same on Facebook. The reason I like Facebook is, God, it's so fun to really look at what my history was, because it keeps a history of what I read, and it's just so interesting to see, like, on this day that I find some weird patterns, like some yearly patterns that are spooky. Like, I'll be reading the same sort of shit on the same day. It's weird. And I find that stuff fascinating. The
Yeah, that is one.
trends.
The memories thing is one thing that's kind of neat about
Yeah.
Facebook. I kind of miss that.
Yeah, you came up on memories because of recently because of our Baltimore Comic Cons. You know, they were in
Baltimore, yeah.
September. And I was like, wow, there's Chris. And there's Chris with Star Joe's. Like, I forgot that you took that picture with us and Star Joe's crew. So it's like, yeah, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, I think that was. Did I go to two Baltimores or just.
I think you
No, I think
went
I
to
went
th I,
to.
no, I think you went to two, or did you go to one and then one Heroes?
I definitely went to one Hero, so I think I did one of each. And then I kind of had to save money for a while, and then now.
Well, then you came here.
I came there, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
And that was fun. We did a lot of
as far as
stuff.
going to cons, though, the pandemic now.
Yeah, I'm still debating. I don't think 2022 I'll go, but maybe 2023, I don't know.
Yeah, someday I'll just have to wait and see, really.
Yeah.
We had a brief period of time, like after I first got vaccinated, I like had a stretch of time where, like, I was not really worrying about things too much and not wearing a mask,
Same,
but
same.
that didn't last too long when they started to. When the Delta variant started coming around, I went back to
Yeah.
my old. I went back to being more careful again because, I mean, I'd rather, even if it's would protect me from going to the hospital, I would still rather not get like
Sick, yeah.
knocked on my ass and have to use, time.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard about our neighbor, but our neighbor that had the chickens and stuff. I had him like save. We went to Albuquerque like just recently. Like we were there for a week, and I had to have him pick up my bags and boards. And I was like, why is he having his daughter pick these things up? Because they're like 50-pound boxes. And when I came back to pick him up, he had COVID. So he could barely make it up his driveway. Like, he's on an oxygen tank. And this is a guy that's like 40 years old. He's
Yikes.
a decade younger than me. So he's dealing with the after effect of COVID now. Like, trying to breathe, you know? So yeah, it was definitely an eye opener for sure.
Yeah. You don't mess around with Jim.
Yeah,
Don't know what it is.
Leroy Brown. What, isn't
But
that the
that's
Leroy Brown song? You don't mess around with Jim. Or God, what is that song?
a Jim Croce song,
Oh
but
yeah.
You don't tug on Superman's
His
cape.
cape, you don't spit into the wind. Yeah.
I don't know what brought that to my mind, though. I don't think I've heard
I
that
don't
many times
know. Yeah, in that
recently.
context.
I just was thinking
Jim
we don't want to
Croce
mess
is a
around.
virus, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, it's like you get like a song stuck in your head. It's kind of like, I guess I was just thinking you don't mess around with COVID, and I just thought you don't mess around with Jim.
Yeah, it's weird how times change how you look at things too, because last night I watched a Blind Date. I don't know if you ever heard of that movie, but it's with Die Hard. What is his name? Bruce Willis.
Bruce
And
Willis.
can't think of her name either, but she was Kim Basinger. And when I saw that movie, and I think it was 1987. I think it came out in 1987. I thought it was like hilarious, like really, really funny. And so I watched it again, and while I found it like entertaining, like I could watch the movie from beginning to end without turning it, and I was entertained. I was like, wow, this is a dark story. And it's weird when you look through it through younger eyes. It was funny because Kim Basinger would get drunk and fuck up everything. But now I look at it more like from eyes wide open, and like they told her not to get drunk because she sort of has like a reaction to alcohol, and he got her drunk. So that's kind of messed up, you know? So I look at it from a different set of eyes than when I was younger. When I was younger, that was funny, you know? She was getting drunk and doing all these crazy things and screwing up his life and getting him fired. And now I look at it through a darker set of eyes as like, wow, you did that? You know? It's weird how times change, but
Yeah, both like you have both the factor of what's funny changes,
yeah.
in general over time. We look back, it's like things don't hold up over time, and then you also look at it just from the just there's just a difference of being older yourself.
Now, what does hold up is Savage Dragon. I read it again, The Baptism of Fire. I've been reading it every year, and God, I just love Savage Dragon. I just, every line, every word, God, I just love that book. I'm obsessed with Eric Larson. Of all the
I
image
like him a lot
creators,
too.
of all of them, he's the one that I like the most in terms of creative output.
Yeah,
But
he's my
I
favorite too.
even like politically alignment, like everything that he comes across, I see eye to eye with him on. Just like how he sticks to his guns and stuff, and like he's the image creator I sort of latch on to. But I love McFarlane and Rob too. Like I do love them. The one thing I love about Rob is his enthusiasm. I don't like when he seems to have, I can't say matured, but at least on social media lately, he's not as,
Like mellowed out, kind of.
yeah, he's sort of mellowed out since COVID, really, since he started doing his podcast and having a podcast and a voice to like talk. He sort of changed his social media, you know, like structure. But I've always liked him because there's certain people like I was like sometimes he would annoy me, but I could look past that. Like I enjoy his stuff, so I look past it, you know. But
I appreciate his enthusiasm too. That's the
I
thing that I like
really
about him too,
He
but
had Eric on it lately. I was like, wow, he had Eric Larson on it, and I like listened to it right away. Like I usually have like a listening order to my podcasts, like this day is this day is this, and I get through the week that way. And I saw that Eric Larson popped up, and I just like skipped everything, and I just said, okay, I'm gonna jump right to this because it's Eric. And I have most of his body of work too, like him and McFarlane. I just obtained the full 3-issue run for, of Coyote that McFarlane did, including his first cover, and it is his first like comic work too. So, like I've been working on these guys for a long time, like trying to complete McFarlane and Liefeld and Eric Larson, and every now and then I learn of something new, and then there's the unobtainables just because they're too expensive, like in the thousand, they're a grand, so I'll
Yeah.
never obtain them, but I've obtained the facsimile editions. So in a nutshell, I have like all his stuff, but damn, I agree with Rob that like if you look at McFarlane's Spider-Man, like that was like eye candy, like it just was beautiful. But if I look for like excitement and dynamic like drawing, it's Eric's doing Spider-Man. Like when he came after McFarlane, like it was an explosive page. Like it went from this awesome looking panel to like this dynamic looking figure. And that's what I like about Eric is his stuff just like looks like it's moving on the page. I really like his Kirby influence for sure.
Yeah, I'd be interested to check out that episode because I Comics Kayfabe did an interview with him. That was really good.
I gotta look at that. I'll watch the video if I kind of so mad at myself, but like I was intimidated by him, but like when he had commissions that were affordable, God, I wish I would have gotten one. That was the time like I was sort of like intimidated because I liked him so much that I met Tom Scholey instead. And that's how I latched on to Tom, as Tom was sitting right next to Eric. And Tom has a very Kirby influenced pencil as well. And I started buying commissions from Tom, but I like kicked myself is I could have had an affordable at the time, Eric Larson commission, and I just was too intimidated, which kind of sucks because I'm such a fan of his, I just like would watch him pen because his hand just like curls around that pencil. It looks so odd. Like I don't know anyone that holds a pencil like that and can draw. Like it just doesn't make sense to me. Nobody holds a pencil like that.
I think that gets it's pretty notorious for that. I think that gets mentioned in the kayfabe interview.
Yeah, it's
Just
crazy.
so
And while not in your wheelhouse, that red room that he's doing, the kayfabe, what's his name? Not Jim Rugg, but the other one.
Hip Hop Family Tree.
Yeah, I can't think of his name, but his red room, oh my God. If you can take the violence, it is so well written. Like it brings you into this world of the dark web and violence and stuff that it just really cool to watch.
Yeah, Ed Piskor.
Yeah.
So did you have any
No, I
what
didn't
was your
have any anything else. Like I read a lot of stuff, but I read some old Battlestar Galactica and realized it was within the years, but I wanted to cover the other two things. So like the classic Dynamite Battlestar Galactica was written by Rick Remender. Pretty awesome. Like I really enjoyed it. That one I was reading in the middle of the night because I couldn't sleep, and I had to link. They sent me an email saying you're going to lose all your Comixology data if you don't link it to an Amazon account. And I
Oh,
don't really
yeah.
use my Amazon account, so I linked it to my wife's, and it popped up this thing that said, well, since you're now linked, we're giving you a free month and you don't have to like that, you don't have to like notify us in 30 days. It'll just like go away. And I was like, well, that's cool. I get a 30 days worth of trying this and then don't have to remember to cancel, Marvel, what is it called? Comixology Unlimited.
Yeah.
And they do have a lot. So like that's where I started reading classic Battlestar Galactica and reread Savage Dragon. 'Cause even though I had
Nice.
the material, it was there.
That's funny because I reread that Savage Dragon miniseries earlier this year
Yeah,
after I watched that interview.
I've reread that series the last 3 years in a row, and I like see different things every time I read it. It's pretty cool, but yeah, I really like Eric Larson's stuff. In Comixology Unlimited, for like my first exposure to it, it was pretty neat. I liked it. I liked what they had. It kind of sucks they don't have everything. Like they have volume one of this and volume five of this, and but it
I was
seems like
surprised
they
though.
cater to the trends though. Like it's almost like Amazon looked at, oh, Venom's coming out and Carnage is coming out. Why don't we at least put out like King of Black and Carnage Unleashed or whatever the comic is called. So it's pretty cool that they do that kind of thing.
Yeah, or
And
Marvel is
or like
telling
Why
them,
the
hey,
Last
let's.
Man, 'cause the TV show's there,
Yeah. No, it's improved. Like when I was using a little more earlier this year, it's IDW and some other publishers have a lot of stuff on there.
Yeah.
I had one. I have like something really quick.
Okay.
It was my end of the night. Try to go to something light before bed.
Yeah.
From Scooby-Doo's Greatest Adventures, celebrating 50 years of Scooby. I don't think this is the. I think this is just one story from the issue. I don't think it's the full issue, but it's from Scooby-Doo 35 from 2000. And
They
the
had
heck?
that one thing on Comixology. Like, I don't buy a lot on Comixology just because I'm a paper guy. But they had that one special, that one, like, it was like a weekend. And it was like, you get all the free Scooby-Doo comics. And they had everything. So
Oh, yeah.
I downloaded every Scooby-Doo comic there was and all the Scooby-Doo team-ups and everything that was available.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to read one of the team ups with like a DC character in it, but most of them are newer.
Yeah.
Not, but this one was from 2000, so it was older than. But it's a story called Fast Food Phantom, and it was written by Bob Fingerman. What I thought actually was interesting about this one is actually penciled by Joe Staton, with inks by Dave Hunt. But it's basically, your typical Scooby-Doo story, but. The Mystery Machine pulls off the road to get some food, because obviously Scoob and Shaggy are hungry because they're always hungry. Like no one can say that old Scoob and I haven't been totally like stoic, but we're starving back here. We're rarving. So they pull off, and there's Eddie's Bigger Burger and Voltaire's Pizza in a Cup. And they're like, pizza in a cup doesn't sound too appetizing. So they go to Eddie's Bigger Burger. And of course, when they're there, a ghost shows up and to scare everybody away. And he says, "While dining here, I choked to death on this bone." And he's got a bone actually like sticking out. Like you can see it's like stuck in his throat and it's like pushing out on his skin. And so everyone takes off except for the gang and the ghost disappears. And Eddie, who runs the place, he's like, "I don't scare too easy, but this has happened before." But it was off hours before. And it just scared the wits out of my staff. And they're like, "Has the other place been visited at all by this ghost?" And he says, "No, but I think pizza in a cup is scary enough to keep his customers away." So they leave Shaggy and Scoob to keep an eye on things at the burger joint, which they're happy to help out there. You know, all the staff except for Eddie ran away, so they're gonna help out in the kitchen. And it's not long before Eddie's wondering if the ghost, or as he calls them, these two bottomless pits, will put him out of business faster because they're chowing down. And meanwhile, Fred and Daphne and Zelma head over to Pizza in a Cup to ask Voltaire, the owner of that place, some questions. And so they're like, he wants to serve them, you know, and they're like, And so he makes. They make some like three pizzas in a cup, and they look pretty gross. He's got this chef working behind the scenes, and it's like he's pouring a beer, you know, he like does the tap and fills these like edible cups with cheese and ingredients and stuff. And Daphne asks, "Do you eat it or drink it?" But all three of them, as they go to like lift it to their mouth, the edible cup, at least I think it's edible, but it all like they all break and it splashes the stuff all over their shirts and stuff. And Voltaire's he's upset, and he's like, "This is, you guys are nice, but this is just like," he's already got lawsuits against him for it happening to other people. And so they finally get a chance to ask him, "Have you had a ghost here?" And he says, "No, there's no need for that. It's already a ghost town." As they're leaving, he points at his chef. He says, "Again, the cups break. Sometimes I think you do it on purpose." And the chef just grunts. He's not a very pleasant looking guy. So the three of them end up finding a storage area, like, and a trap door, and they discover that the storage for the two restaurants are actually connected. Meanwhile, the ghost appears again at the burger place, and everyone runs out again. Shag and Scooby are trying to eat as much as possible because it might be their last meal, so they're hiding out in the corner, shoving burgers and fries into their mouths. And Eddie's like, "Man, these two are unbelievable." But they all eventually, Eddie and Shag and Scooby all end up getting run out of the place as well. So Zelma is the one that figures it all out. She's like, "We've got a ghost with a bone through his neck, says he choked on the bone and died, basically. And we've got a place that feeds pizza, and we've got a place that feeds burgers. Something doesn't add up here." So they go back to the burger place, because the ghost is attacking and is about to like attack Shag and Scooby. So the other three come back through the connected storage rooms, and Fred opens up the trap door in Eddie's storage room just as the ghost is about to approach, and he falls down the trap door, and Fred tackles him and pulls his, you know, of course he's got a mask because, you know, it's Scooby-Doo. He pulls it off, and yeah, it turns out that it's Voltaire's chef, the miserable looking dude. And apparently he was hired by a conglomerate to run both places out of business, so that they could have the prime real estate. With the pizza place, he just was doing that by convincing him to switch to the pizza in a cup model, knowing it would tank his business. But with the burger joint, he had to come up with something more creative, and that's where he came up with the ghost idea. And Zelma explains further, she noticed that the stock rooms were connected, so it would be easy for somebody to sneak back and forth. And then the whole thing with the bone through his neck and saying that he choked on a bone when there's no bones in burgers or pizza. So all's well that ends well, and Voltaire is going to go back to an old-fashioned pizza business, and him and Eddie, they get along well because there's enough hungry people for both their places to stay afloat. So,
I would
as
have
long
done a
as
pizza in a cup. I think it would
you
have. I would have
had tried it.
tried it for sure. Because you could get a burger anywhere, but you
Yeah.
can't get a pizza in a cup anywhere.
That's true. I guess the closest thing is like a calzone, but that's, you don't have the problem of all the cheese and stuff spilling on your shirt. The
Yeah.
calzone, because the calzone's closed up. But yeah, I
But if it's
loved
in a
Scooby-Doo when
cup,
I was a
can't you
kid.
just like spoon it in? Like eat it with the spoon?
There you go. Maybe there's potential there. You should get on
Yeah, I like
that.
Scooby-Doo. He's cool.
Yeah, I watched a lot of Scooby-Doo when I was a kid.
I watched it pretty religiously all the way up until Scrappy-Doo, and then I watched a season with Scrappy and I just it kind of lost interest.
Yeah, I think Scrappy sent a lot of people out.
Yeah. But I was old school with Scooby-Doo. Like, I think the best episodes are like the earlier episodes. And I liked when he would team up with stuff like the Three Stooges
Yeah.
and Batman and weird actors like
Harlem
yeah,
Globetrotters,
that was cool.
Phyllis Diller. Honestly, I probably learned who a lot of those people were from Scooby-Doo, because I mean they would rerun those all the time,
Yeah.
the older ones.
Yeah.
So
All right. Well, we can wrap this one up. You can reach Chris at MythMakingETC on the Twitter. I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. And Rob is at Rob Krieger, and he's working, so tell him to take a break.
yeah, that.
Tell him to take a lunch break or something, because it's about lunchtime for you guys anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll talk again soon. You can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com on Facebook at geekbrunchpodcast. Click the like button, and we'll be back in hopefully 2 weeks. And we'll talk to you later, Chris.
All right,
All
sir.
right.
You have a good week.
I will. You too. All
Good talking to you.
right. Take
Take
care.
care.
Bye.
All right. Bye.